Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. It has been about, I think about a week and a half since I made a new episode out here on the patio. I've been working on a project, as some people say around the world, to do some drum designs for a buddy of mine with some cool pipes on it. Maybe I'll play that at the very, very end. If you're part of the Facebook community, then you've already seen it. So, for one, it's about 68 degrees out here, which I know that many of you are in the hundreds or 90s at night at this time of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. Those of you down south, I'm sure you're bundled up really nice in your homes. Of course, we're freezing to death when you're getting a tan. But he gave me this stick that he got for free. Hopefully this doesn't put me on my butt. It's really dark, so we'll see what happens here. So today, I wanted to talk about, I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to call this, so I'm not going to try to quote anything unless it comes to me. I'm watching a Red Dwarf episode. This is how I like to organically come up with these episodes sometimes. And there was an episode about coincidences. And Crichton talks about a dude named Cloyster who writes this book about coincidences. They actually have a copy of it right there inside the episode. In fact, I should find out this guy's first name. Arthur Cloyster, yeah. I haven't read the entire book. I just listened to some excerpts from YouTube because I got to get episodes done. There's a very common, this isn't all about just this guy because we're going to get into some other things, because it started to put together just from the dialogue that Crichton said to, I think, Rimmer. Or maybe it was the cat, I can't remember. But he was talking about the fact that during traumatic experiences, there's a weird ability to control the universe. I think that's sort of what it was. And I was listening, I was thinking, oh my gosh, that is profound and very interesting and very logical. Especially to the Deep Thoughts radio audience. Imagine this. We have talked about in several episodes that the more you adopt your body, that you gain the paradigm and the constraints of what we define currently, the day that you're having this thought, of reality. And the more that you perhaps were, let's just say you were in a previous life, back when we only had a few hundred thousand people on Earth or whatever, however the hell we got here, that our consensus reality might have been completely different. This place could have been flat in the past, globe now, and it's going to be a tetrahedron or something, some 12-sided thing, in the future. Continually, maybe it's a Mobius strip at some point. Only because that's the way we conceive of it. But it's going to be evolutionary, because unless there's a beam, this would be a very fascinating experiment, if there could be a beam that even the people shooting the beam shoot towards themselves. And they say, look, everyone's going to think this about reality. We have the Mandela effect. A bunch of people remember it one way, and now it's changed to a different way. Well, what does that really mean? If that was a machine, the CERN Hadron Collider, contributing to that situation, which I don't know that that makes any mechanical sense. I don't know what spinning particles would be capable of doing. Maybe it emits a beam. I mean, it's supposed to be two protons slamming into each other. But let's think about what the trauma experience really means, because we also have PTSD. What is PTSD? It's a traumatic experience where you leave your body, basically. You either lose it because you're suffering a physical impact of some sort, which is, could be a concussive wave, could be blunt force. That's the physical manifestation of PTSD. Could be hellish sound waves, which are also concussive. But it could also be just the simple mechanical, electrical overload in your brain due to someone being very brutal to you mentally. Yelling and screaming at you. Your brain overloads, and thus the circuitry that would normally do one thing starts to overload, and unlike a mechanical device that might actually physically pop a fuse, a rectifying diode to protect the circuit, or blows, you know, capacitors and resistors and microchips and all this other stuff like an EMP wave, we don't do that, so we swallow it up. But perhaps as a mechanism to survive, we simply exit our body mentally, the soul that's attached to our pineal gland through our brainstem. It simply goes, whoa, 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 I'm getting out of here, man. You've seen people in bath salts, right? I don't know if you guys have seen those videos. You've got an absolute zombie feral human body with no soul. And they're making the most hideous noise you've ever heard in your life. People who go on DMT trips, I've seen videos. And they go into the same type of feral, groaning, moaning, weird thing that the bath salt people go through. Don't do bath salts, okay? I haven't done DMT, can't recommend, but a lot of people have done that. Just do it with professionals if you do. But what would it be besides that? Okay, why is there a negative effect when we go through massive trauma? Let me throw a very simple concept at you right at the very beginning here. Have you ever taken apart an object and put it back together? And no matter how talented you are at putting something back together, it is never, ever as cool, smooth, tightly fit together as the factory was capable of doing it when you first bought it. Being a guy who worked on computers and VCRs and all kinds of other stuff, you can definitely fix something. Mr. Carlson's lab on YouTube, that guy fixes radios and makes them better than when the day they were made because he's upgrading components and all that kind of stuff. But I think we all know that after a radio's age 70 years and you take it apart, the tight fit of the back and the plate and the ceramic on the outside, it's together and it's okay. It's going to pass the average eye, but it'll never have that sort of vacuum seal it had from the factory, right? So what if that moment when we attach to our body, that spark that happened inside your mother, was the most pristine, perfect, inceptional moment for you to attach to your body? And that the more you experience either severe trauma or micro-trauma, and you can't process it, right? There's a lot of us that can handle a lot of craziness. Everyone's got plenty of threshold. Everybody. I mean, you could have, right now, if a bomb went off, you've seen me jump to fireworks. If something's going off like a mushroom cloud, you know, 2 miles from where I'm sitting, I'm definitely going to go through some, oh shit, that's really bad, right? But if you're forced to escape as a matter of pure survival, and then you come back in to your body, you leave the silver cord behind, as the gurus would say in India. Perhaps we're not connecting well with the human body after we do a micro retraction from it. You're a soldier in a vehicle that gets hit by an IED. You don't even have a choice, man. You just get knocked absolutely out, and then you start drifting. So coincidences is just an interesting outcome where you talk about the idea that if you're conscious, two different words there. If you're conscious and you are separating from your body, almost like a micro moment of a dreamlike state, and you take my statement that I've said in several episodes, what if the biggest secret about the universe is you control it? You're able to sync up with other people's moments. Now, I haven't finished this guy's book. I haven't even dented it, really. But this whole concept's triggering this other concept that might give us a more homogeneous view of our entire existence. But imagine this was true. Imagine we're on a lost island, right? And we're raising each other because all civilization's gone. We're Gilligan's Island, basically. And you and I, we're all in the same place and we've had all these conversations. And now we keep in mind this possibility that this might be true. And then traumatic things happen because we are on a weird island. We don't know where the cliffs are. We don't know certain animals. We wake up and someone's been eaten alive. We don't know, oh my God, what happened there? But we're now watching the tribe. We're watching our own state of mind, and we are keeping these things as possibilities of repercussions. And we start to see people sort of dial away. Why do so many people end up in mental institutions after traumatic experience? They never seem right, right? People who take too many drugs can dial out, and they have physical problems controlling their body. They might end up with a stutter. I know people who stutter because I can tell that their soul is going way faster than they're capable of bringing the words out of their mouth. I know people that are stuttering because they're so nervous that they're trying to process two things at one time: their nervousness and what they're trying to say. Oh my God, I'm getting more nervous. Oh my God, I'm nervous that I'm going to fail. Predominant feeling. And you can't do two things at once in the human mind. You can do autonomic things, which, you know, a drummer will get to a point where they can push down a conscious skill into the autonomic memory of the cerebellum. And so, like my buddy Bobby says, he goes, you know, at first you're trying to really play right. And he goes, after a couple of years, you're playing a song that you've played a million times thinking about, did I leave the oven on at home? You know, because you've elected it back. You've done it so many times, it's memory. And all you have to do is consciously sort of push it along. Here comes the transition. Oh, yeah, that was easy. You know, same thing with everything. But what if we're trying to grip back into our system? We're trying to get the spark of the factory warranty back. Then the question starts to arrive, which is, why is PTSD treatment? PTSD is just an interesting thing that we know about, where, again, a moment gets lost in time. They want to recreate the trauma for the patient such that they can go, oh, yeah. And it's almost like we're saying, we're taking you back to the moment you fell out of the car so that you can get back in the car, and psychologically, in the back of your mind, you never fell out. Welcome to your brain again. Welcome to your consciousness again. Now, if any of this is true, we all know that trauma is a bad thing, but I think most of us poo-poo how often we get exposed to truly life-changing traumatic events. I don't have any trauma. Well, yeah, there's major events in the world at times which traumatize the entire planet. We're seeing things on TV that we've never seen before, or in rare cases, we actually see it in real life. A soldier goes off and sees things that no one should ever see. But I think there's a lot of little ones. You know, there was this big push, which is still sort of, you know, it's rough for the mind, disciplining our children in various ways, especially with some sort of physical trigger to get them to shake out of their one-track mind to pay attention to another concept, which is, you are involved in something that could hurt you really badly, and I need you to completely divorce yourself from the idea that putting your hand in fire is a good idea. I need to traumatize you to make sure that fire in your hand comes with your butt's on fire, you know, in a different way, right? When I was a kid, man, you got paddled, you got belted, you got your big dad's hand smacking on you. Always different for girls, of course, but boys are the rambunctious. You know, our rite of passage always seems to involve threatening our own life, right? I think when I was young, the girl's big rite of passage was, how fast can you get pregnant, you know? But now imagine this was a concept that's well understood at even a more advanced level by those that can control the trauma that we experience. They can throw things at you. They can always get other degenerate human beings to help enact these moments because they want to see the world burn. Sort of a bummer, right? But it's probably going to happen forever. We're probably always going to have sociopaths, psychopaths. Again, you treat a kid bad in school. You know, I don't have any young kids, but if I had kids and they came home and told me a story about treating someone horribly who didn't deserve it, you know, even deserving is almost an impossibility. In some cases, right? Someone else should handle the problem, not my kid. But you know, sometimes your kids got to defend themselves. But I would discipline my kid to the maximum. And I'd make that other kid come to my house and we would patch things up. Because the second you treat a kid bad because he's got red hair or he's a different color than your family or he's just goofy or strange, you're starting to create a sociopath, starting to create a psychopath. And that's how the world burns to the ground. That kid's going to grow up, and if he has any power whatsoever, it'll be to pass around the problems that everyone else helped manifest in him. And he could have bad parents that are giving him all these situations. But it could just be circumstantial, right? Stop being prejudiced against people. You know the game. So the verdict on this cigar is it will not stay lit. I don't know why. But, you know, with all things on this show, the very first quadrant that we take care of is ourself. You have to. You're dead. Anybody you are trying to help in this world no longer gets your assistance. Depending on your age, it's going to be your friends next. You age a little bit more, it'll be your family. And then when you really mature, you'll actually try to help the entire world as best you can. Now, it would be really, really scary if someone said, I just need to be traumatized and then I can control the world. Oh, well, let's create a world where we traumatize everybody. I don't believe that that is a good mechanism, right? You could cook a hot dog with a flamethrower, but you don't do it, do you? We want to control the world through meditation, through consensus. We want to put out good human vibes, which make other humans feel good. Again, when have you ever been in a situation where you were feeling very, very stressed out and some cool cat, your grandma, your grandfather, your mom, your dad, some friend comes up and starts just sitting with you and going, let's talk it out, man. What's going on? And immediately you feel better. It's because they're putting out a vibe that you're taking in and you can't biologically refuse it. That's how we really want to control the world or make it a better place, I should say. Now, it was interesting about the first chapters of the book that I listened to was that when you read sort of classic literature in the scientific realm, this is about 1919-ish, 1912-ish, somewhere in there, the authors of science back in those days, the men were extremely arrogant in many cases about their philosophy, and it was like they had to be bullies with their philosophy. And the books usually start out, I've got probably a half a dozen books that are like this, and I've even mentioned one that was all about fearing death, and they just try to chastise humanity if you aren't on board with their psychosis, which is aka their fear of death. They try to tell you that you're unintelligent if you don't fear death. Why? Because they feel insecure that they do fear death. So come on board and get into my psychosis. So this gentleman was talking about, I don't want to try to say this word, but something starts with a K, and it's the theory that when we procreate, we pass down our attributes to each other as human beings. Darwin, of course, couldn't allow that to occur. Only the Saxe-Coburg family, through Queen Victoria, believed this previous theory, which is why she inbred all of the royalty of Europe together to create this ruling class race. Well, obviously, they believed in breeding. Most aristocratic monarchies do. The Egyptians certainly believed in such a thing. Queen Victoria married her first cousin, you know. But this guy said that the dude who was pushing the theory was trying to, it was a midwife toad. I'm not sure what the hell that is. But he was trying to show that that this was all working out, that his theory was right, and what ended up occurring at the very end was that someone falsified data in his name and screwed up all of his experiments. He was then chastised by his community, and he blew his brains out on some hillside. Well, obviously, they're trying to sabotage any logical theory of how we reproduce, so it will yield us ignorant, them superior, in terms of just genetic intelligence. And genetic intelligence has nothing to do with race. If anything, it has to do with opportunity. But again, I know some families that have had no aristocratic opportunities. They've had no monarchy opportunities. They've never had $1 million in the bank. And they're an extremely brilliant family that all their kids are also brilliant. But they just apply themselves to farming or sciences that are local. They don't write books. They don't get famous. And so typically in our ridiculous society that we have today, we don't honor them. Now, I was told by a British friend of mine who played Crichton that in the 80s, up until about the 80s, you know, one of the most revered careers, even more than a rock star, was being a professor. And that rock stars are not supposed to get as much as a professor. Why would that be? Because over time, the professors have been the ones that have built the cities. They built the medicine. They built everything that helps a society suffer less. And a musician, although great and entertaining, can't address all of these fundamental sciences that build a society and fortify them and protect them. Okay. So there was this movement over the last 3.5 years where it said that there are no such things as coincidences. Now, there are strong, strong arguments for the tense in which that was being asserted to us through posts online. The idea was that there were a tremendous amount of these things, and that in that particular regard, that is probably something that is actually being orchestrated, perpetrated as a coincidence, such that you would devalue the significance of the event and no longer grab on a thread in the sweater. And what's that do? That cuts you off from knowing how the world works. What is science about in many regards in the modern 21st century? It's all about misleading you and misdirecting you, as my stupid science episode will suggest, as it is now fully encoded and going up tonight to the Patreons. I'm having to pinch this stick because it's got a hole all the way down the center. So if you see me pinching this stick, that is why. You're like, dude, he's like punching the stick. Got to compress the hole so I get some pressure to pull the cherry back to my mouth. And he's a can of butane on this thing. So why mention this other sort of information off to the side? A big part of it has to do with if you are at all capable through any methodology of controlling the universe, then what is the first or what is the second aspect of that, and really the foundational aspect to what that would actually mean for yourself personally, anyone you're helping, and perhaps the universe, if your force gets as strong as perhaps Yoda. Well, there's a little Twilight Zone out there. It was Billy Mumy. It's called It's a Good Life, and it's about a little boy who was like 7 years old, 7 to 9, somewhere in there. I think he was 7. And he is in control of the entire universe. He was just born with the power to will the universe. And what's actually fascinating about that entire concept is if there is any inroad from humanity to controlling the universe, it is scientifically and theoretically sound to suggest that one human being would be born with such powers. What was the problem in the episode? He was a child. So every single thing that happened to this place, including wishing away the rest of the world, so he just had this little tiny town, was through the eyes of a child. The destruction that this kid caused in people's lives, the horror and other fellow trauma that he created for his fellow citizens of the town, who had to habitually kiss his ass so they could stay alive. It was all through the eyes of a little boy. We're always talking about, you know, getting control of the world and, you know, we're going to take it all back and all this other stuff. And I've been lamenting on many episodes and you guys are probably tired of hearing it. And I'm not going to completely obsess on this, but unless we are mature enough to take control of the world and its issues, then we're not ready. The whole thing is ancestral. Trauma is a matter of perception. Trauma is a matter of pre-existing events that you have dealt with in the past. If you have heard, well, let's put it this way, when they train a hunting dog, they no longer respond to shotgun blasts at all. You can surround a hunting dog with 10 dudes and all blasting shotguns and they don't move. How did they teach them how to do that? It sounds brutal, but these dogs, again, are treated like royalty in families, equal to, if not better than, the kids themselves. What they do is they get them real hungry. Actually, they don't try to make them hungry. They just give them food, really delicious food. And they go down to eat the food, and they take a shotgun and go, bam! and the dog runs away from the food. And every single time the dog goes to the food, they shoot a shotgun. Until the dog no longer responds to the shotgun because he's so absolutely feral and hungry, he doesn't hear it anymore. Apparently, it doesn't take that long to get that particular stage taken care of. Now, pointing and all this other stuff, it is the most amazing creature I have ever seen in my life. When they see a bird, they freeze. And I mean, they freeze like ice, man. And their tail goes straight out, like a little arrow. And when the tail goes out, that means they've seen it when they freeze. And so you look the vector up their back. And there, you can't even see them. Everybody moves into place. The dog is holding. Everyone's being real quiet because they won't scare away the birds. And then they go, bam, go. And sometimes you get one, you get three dogs, you get more than that probably. I think I've only hunted with two. But they go diving in, scare the birds out, and bam, 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 bam. We take the birds home and we eat them, so don't get all freaked out. Well, what if we were those dogs for most of the traumatic events that are sort of in vogue today? Why is a police officer better with a gun than a pedestrian in most cases? Now, obviously, soldiers are even higher than police officers in some cases if they're fresh out of war. They're at the convenience store. Someone's trying to rob the place. The guns are going off, and these dudes are like, yeah, whatever. Who's doing that? Who's shooting the gun? Okay, I'm going to pull out mine. I'm not shaking. And then, boom, they take out the perpetrator. So it's our perception of the world, what we think it should be, how empathetic we are to everything that's around us, that sets the foundation of whether or not we should ever have access to this capability whatsoever. And then one has to train oneself to see how to engage reality to then perhaps control it. And that's the good story. It's actually a damn good stick, but it just has a hole all the way down the center. All right. But now here's what this episode is going to be focusing on. If trauma, we know trauma can program the subconscious. It is literally the mechanism to compartmentalize the mind. The more you buy into trauma and become susceptible to trauma, the more they can program you. Meaning the more that you hide away from things that freak you out, the more you're susceptible. Well, imagine they can just literally put together a chain of events, and they know that when you experience this particular chain of events, they've got you in a certain place mentally. I'm sure there's a foundational situation where they just want the compartments to exist in your mind. And then again, if I'm going to give you a fictitious thing, but it makes mechanical sense when we talk about this technology. Time for a real stick. Okay, I had to throw that one away. Imagine a traumatic event happens somewhere in the world. You're never going to be there because it's a big planet. It's something akin to the event that happened in 2001. All right. Except there's going to be one big distinction. And we don't know that this hasn't already occurred. Feel free to go down a rabbit hole and tell me if this has occurred. The event occurs, and visually and auditorily speaking, two things are occurring. This is fictitious, okay? But this is to drive the point home. They expressly use the color blue in the event. It's a blue thing. It's a blue building. It's something blue. The guy that did it, maybe his last name's blue or whatever. It's a blue faction in the world. They keep saying the word blue, 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 blue all day long for days and days and days. And there's something, again, blue on the screen. Maybe they don't even say anything. You're just seeing this color while processing this trauma. So they've created a compartment, and the doorknob to the compartment is the color blue. And then second event occurs. It's a different color. It's a number. It's some crazy person's name. We all know that there was a name attached to the 2001 thing. You even mentioned his name. He became the boogeyman for all of us that were asleep at the time. All right. Now, guess what? I'll give you a real-world example. Ha, just occurred to me. A real-world example. In 1995, in Oklahoma City, a yellow Ryder truck was involved in an explosion. The Ryder truck company was known for these yellow trucks. It was their trademark. So was DHL, but Ryder was just always the yellow. And I don't know if they've switched back to it. I can't remember. But they switched all their trucks white because they knew that that color was associated with this situation. People, I have to say, man, I remember I'm all the way in California. I'm in the Bay Area, but every time I saw one of those trucks, I was like, get away from that, dude. Who knows who else might be doing a copycat crime, maybe associated with some deeper organization that made that occur. Again, I was asleep, so forgive me. But even with a deeper organization, repeats, that makes sense to me. So we could be, and I'm sure we are, sitting in the bed of traumatic events that are orchestrated, and they're being associated with various triggers. Now, if there's any connection for real, and this is, takes a little bit of existential soul belief, okay? But if the soul does truly exit the body a little bit and therefore has a problem reattaching in its full factory settings, not meaning your memory's been wiped or anything, but just truly you are attached to your body. I can tell you that in my life, okay, I've definitely experienced, I guess, events that may have been categorized as traumatic, but just getting my butt whipped a couple times, or maybe six or seven times, I rationalized it because when I grew up, even just 2 years later, I look back on why I was getting my butt kicked, and I totally agreed with the punishment. So it just lost its traumatic quality. And I was always kind of charging forward in life as a kid, man. I was like, you know, again, like, my friends would come to my house and say, what are we doing today? And I'd say, we're going to steal a bunch of stuff. Okay, great. So I didn't feel like I was out of control in my life. Even though I felt my life was a little chaotic and I wouldn't have moved to seven different schools, would have gone to three, I still didn't feel insecure necessarily on any cosmic, you know, significant level. But I have definitely bumped into friends with a very similar type of lifestyle. Hell, even ones that got to go to the three schools in their lifetime who are sort of just scared of life. They're just shaky and they're just frail. They're otherwise completely functional. Okay? Then you have within that group of people that have experienced the trauma and have actually incurred what we might categorize as sort of a... I don't want to ever say the word permanent because I don't believe in the word permanent, but they've had a prolonged trauma, aka lack of control in their life because these events can't go away. Whether it be someone touching them when they're kids, someone beating them up when they were young, you know, like a father or mother was a drunk or something, you know, whatever, something that just wouldn't go away. They were stuck in the household. They couldn't control it. They went to a tough school, getting in fights all the time, and they weren't scrappers, and so they couldn't defend themselves. Even when they got their butt kicked, they took it really as a I'm a failure kind of person. It's still like, man, I better go lift weights, better go learn how to fight, you know, better get some friends around me so I don't, you know, walk down that alley by myself sort of thing. Or maybe I should take a different way and just defuse the whole situation, right? You'll have the kids, like the old song, A Boy Called Sue, right? For those of you who don't know the story, especially if you're not from America, it's an old country song. Wasn't it Johnny Cash? And it was just a song about a guy that left his son right when he was young, left him with his mother, but he made sure his name was Sue. And eventually the son finds a father and says, you son of a bitch, you name me Sue. What kind of asshole does that? And he goes, because I know I wasn't going to be there for you, so I needed to name you something so you'd be ridiculed. Why? Because I needed you to get beat up as a kid. Because I knew you needed to be strong because I wasn't going to be there. I think that's the overall synopsis of the song. So the kids that do pick themselves up, and they simply use the challenge to grow, to mature. And there are others that fall more so, I think, today, fall victim to it. Victim to it. Why? We're in a victim society at this point. There's all these invisible prizes that you're going to acquire by constantly telling people all your problems. Instead of the water cooler conversations that are benign, it's always some super acidic story. How sick are you today? How many ailments do you have today? Why are you totally broken and you can't fix yourself? Because something happened to you 20, 30, 40 years ago. I don't know if I've ever put this on point, in episodes, and I would love to know the survey of you guys and gals listening here. I didn't know this about myself consciously until probably maybe, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And it wasn't a result of the show, it was a result of talking to people. And it had to do with me seeing frailness in other human beings and kind of going, you know, like real long-term, or I should say long-term, but like long-term effects of events that were a long time ago. And they'll say, well, I just can't do that. I just can't do that. And if something really easy, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine recently and we're talking about seeing scary movies. And she said, you know, I don't like to watch scary movies. I just have an imagination. I can't get rid of it. And I'm sitting there going, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's a weakness, man. That means that as long as someone walks into your house and does a home invasion, you are absolutely useless instantaneously, because it'll be your very first time that you're ever forced to deal with the fact that something scary is happening in the room. And during these conversations, I realize that the one thing that I don't tolerate in my own life is weakness. Not physically, not mentally, not spiritually. It doesn't mean I've got it all under control. It just means when I identify it, I'm like, okay, that's got to go. Like I told you this story a long time ago, I'll make it super quick. One of the elders in my church talked to me when I was about 19 years old. He said he bumped into a bad car accident. He found a really messy situation where he needed to cover up a body that was missing a key part of the upper body, part of the body. And he's like, I'm just looking for a towel, I'm looking for something. He sees the towel on the ground, so he's like, oh, there it is, just exactly what I need. He pulls the towel to cover the body, and the thing that was missing off the body rolled out of the towel. It destroyed the guy for 4 months. He said he couldn't sleep. Father of two, needs to go to work, needs to be functional. And I remember hearing that and going, oh man, you know, I would have done the same thing probably. I don't know. I would have been 19, so it would have been crazy. But if I had never been exposed to anything horrendous, and the internet is so kind in that way, isn't it? That if I ran into an accident in the same exact manner, and one person is fatally injured, but someone else just needs my help. And I'm sitting there puking my guts out because of this other thing, and this person just needs me to push on an artery or something. Keep them awake. And I can't function. Then I'm responsible in way in my own standards of this person's death. So when I, probably about 7 years later, the internet comes around and there's sites that show you police photographs of homicides and things. And I took myself through a bunch of those photographs. And today, they're all moving now. It's horrendous. Now, again, I can only do what I can do in a virtual sense. Don't really ever want to experience that stuff, of course, but I want to be of use to somebody. But it is interesting how we take on and onboard these weaknesses, and that results in trauma. If you have things that you allow to make you freaked out really, really easily, and you're like, oh, I just don't do that. I respect the fact that if it was an idealistic world, that'd be great. It's 1955, you live in the middle of Kansas, the United States of America, or pick a rural area in your country. Yeah, you could do that. But it might not be too crazy to say that we are closest we've ever been as a society to a true apocalyptic situation, right? We've got plans on the blueprint board to rid the society of most of the people on this planet. If you are fortunate enough to be one of the people left over, I think that's a fortunate statement. But you're in such trauma that you can't function. Well, you're going to get picked up by a helicopter, picked off by a helicopter, whatever. You're not going to be able to survive. We want to have clear frames of mind. And one of the biggest mistakes that the people that orchestrate events have run into is that they have so abused the system. All these reoccurring things, they don't even affect us anymore. You know, I don't want to mention them by name, but you know what I'm talking about. Places that are random places that are picked, and then people who walk in are carried out, if you know what I mean. But don't we say nowadays that humanity is disappearing, that empathy is disappearing? I got people in my family. You're almost like, hey, are you awake, man? Because you're just operating in a pure satanic methodology, which is you're just getting your own and you're who cares about anybody else? Even their closest family members, they don't care about sometimes. It's rare, but it happens. And we're sitting there going, man, is there something in the Kool-Aid, something in the running water? Is it something in a shot, a drink? What is the thing that's making this humanity disappear? Is it truly just TikTok videos? Well, what if it is simply that we are like a bladder that you can only flex a certain amount of times before the bladder just starts getting brittle and it breaks apart and it's no longer what it is. It's like a speaker in a stereo. It can only vibrate so many thousand times before it just finally turns into ash and it's gone. So the more that we make ourselves susceptible and we endorse our weaknesses and we run away from the mouse on the chair like the old 50s sitcoms, the mouse is controlling you, man. That's one of the most crazy things. It was kind of funny is the women I grew up with would have chased that mouse with a meat cleaver, man. He was scared of the women, not the other way around. But there's all these video compilations, these funny meme compilations online, right? These video ones. And you'll have like a guy looking at a lizard, little tiny gecko. Oh my God, this is so cute, so amazing. And the gecko jumps on the person and you hear a grown man scream like a 2-year-old girl. And you're like, whoa, really, man? You're really freaked out about a... I mean, yeah, I understand you're in Australia and you got those freaking spiders. Was it the wolf spider that's like the size of your hand? Yeah, you know, you just have to learn, do they bite? And if they do bite, what happens? If that's the case, you shouldn't be messing around with the thing in the first place. You should be pounding it into like spider pate if you can. I mean, you know, you got to protect yourself. You can't just get all cutesy-wootsy with black widows, you know? So at a time when we really need to be sort of toughened up, and I think a lot of us are toughened up by a lot of crazy stuff. I don't know about you, but I'd never wanted to be exposed to all the crap I've been exposed to since, say, 1995, when that thing happened in Oklahoma, and then another one in New York. You know, I wouldn't have wished that on anybody. But now what happens to reinforce our trauma? To reinforce the memory of it all? They keep ratcheting up and ratcheting up and ratcheting up the event. Don't forget it. Don't forget it. Go to an airport. Take all your clothes off, basically. That thing happened 20 years ago, and I'm still worried about this faction that's been utterly destroyed in the world. It's like the toll on the bridge. Oh, why is there a toll on the bridge? Well, we got to pay for it. Oh, that's cool. Well, that's great. We'll have it paid for in 15 years, right? When 15 years comes by, the bridge is paid for. Oh, we decided to keep the toll because we're going to use the money to pay for our summer homes and jet skis. 100 years later, you're still paying ridiculous amounts of money to cross the Golden Gate Bridge, the Bay Bridge, the San Mateo Bridge, the Embarcadero. Your society just takes it, man. Just takes it and takes it and takes it. Man, if you think it's just that area of the world, well, ask yourself, is any toll on a bridge ever disappeared? I'm sure it has in better parts of the world, but I don't know any of in the United States, man. They take exotic highways here in California, Southern California, where I live. It's just beautiful, man. Countryside, really wide lanes. There's a toll on it. It's never going to go away. And Google Maps doesn't care, right? It just sends you right on those toll bridges. It doesn't even tell you. You're about to be charged $5. It's got to be a connection, a financial kickback there. Well, we know, we know on record the GPS of a car. And if a GPS of a car goes through your toll, you owe us $1. You owe us 10% or whatever it is, right? Now, going back to the cloister theory, where a traumatic event creates a coincidence, I got to get to the end of the book to really figure out how he orchestrates that mathematically in his mind. You and I are both in the same situation. There's, I mean, you know, take any one of the traumatic events we've discussed on the show. Did everyone in Las Vegas that infamous night suddenly realize that, oh, your name's this too? My name's this. My cousin's this. My cousin's that. I own a Ford Prefect or Ford whatever, you know, Ford Prefect. It's an old British car. You know, I drive a Mustang 85 too, you know. It's like, was that all happening because a bunch of people were experiencing this other thing that was horrific? Sort of have my doubts, man. I was just talking to a really good friend of mine tonight. And we're talking about dreams, and this relates in the sense of your soul, because I wasn't sure if this gentleman, I know he doesn't have any organized religion in his system, but he's definitely coming around, he's older now, and he's just, his brain got a boost, I swear to God, he's more sharp today than he ever was, and it's just a treat to talk to him. We're getting to conversations we never were allowed to have before. And he's seeing things differently. And we're talking about the soul. And we're talking about he had actually had a wife pass away at one point. And he's there right when she passes. And he had the experience that a lot of folks have. Where he's like, I could just see that this vessel, which I'm going to obviously honor for different reasons, was not my wife. It was my wife. But it's no longer my wife. And he just had this empirical truth sort of occur to him at that point. It's almost like she said, I'm right here. I'm with you now more than you ever will ever have had me in our 38-year marriage. His dreams are going into overdrive. He's having lucidity in his dreams. He's having continuous dreams like we always talk about. And it was funny because he's reporting it to me. He said that he's having dreams now that are so detailed that he actually sees dust on a surface. He's seeing fingerprints on glass. That's pretty cool. In about 3 years, he'll be 80 years old, okay? Isn't that pretty cool? He's probably got lots of years left, to be honest. What I've tried to do on this particular show is take our sort of unspoken theories, and of course, Hindus and Buddhists and what have you have spent centuries and millennia, I should say, studying this. The only other thing that I would caution against just pure ingestion of those paradigms is that those paradigms were being introduced at a time when a lot of other belief systems were in place that you just have no choice but to integrate them into these advanced philosophies of thinking. You're not your body, you're not your mind, you are your soul, right? The soul attaching to the body creates a temporary consciousness, which is your mind. This infinitely small container to handle the infinity of your soul, which is plugged directly into the universe, right? I think it's safe to say that the more that you have that bond richly connected, beautifully connected, completely connected, the more that this life will at least be manageable, entertaining, less stressful, perhaps, more productive. If trauma is truly a hammer on the mechanism that keeps us connected to our vessel, thus doing what? If the soul and the body make the mind, which is your consciousness right now, listening to me right now, and there is a mechanism that they can orchestrate at a rhythm in this world to squeeze the hose, right? You ever been using a garden hose and all of a sudden it starts going voo, voo, and you look back and someone's stomping on the hose, you know, just being jokey with you? All right. Well, what if that resulted in the fact that every time they stomped on that hose, just a little bit, an infinitesimal amount of the water never ever comes back out of the hose because perhaps it gets collapses at the point of being stomped on. And eventually it ruptures back there where someone's been playing a joke, you know, kinking the hose on you or whatever. And it simply stops working. That means that this situation destroys the mind to whatever degree they can get it to affect you. And like I said, if an event is attached to a trigger that you can't consciously put together, there's even, I mean, you know, you walk into supermarkets, right, and they've got music playing. And ever since I was a kid working for Walmart, when Sam Walton was still alive, we had American products in the store, they told us right away that, well, I actually had to take care of the customer service desk for a brief couple hours once where someone unexpectedly didn't show up because of the snow, and I had to put the music on. And the cassettes were marked with a label that said subliminal this, subliminal that, subliminal this. Well, you know, they have subliminal messages in the music. It says, don't steal our shit, you know? Well, I would sit there, because I was a stockman at first, and I had a lot of mopping and cleaning and stocking and stuff, so I'm just listening to the music, right? Now, of course, when the store's over, we start playing our own stuff, like Boston. For whatever reason, that was playing a lot. So, obviously, it's not in that music, but I'd sit there and work, and I'd be like, can I hear it? You know? And it's like, of course you can't hear it. I honestly, to this day, don't know exactly how they embed that kind of stuff in there. So, an event's occurring, and all this amazing stuff is being embedded. Okay, so they have a big event that everybody notices, and you're getting all these triggers embedded that you can't consciously recognize. Now, all you got to do to get the message again, in the more obtuse, or I should say the more acute technique, is turn the TV back on. It's your favorite sitcom, and the commercials are coming on. It's all embedded in there, these subliminal triggers, and you all of a sudden you feel uneasy because you're watching TV. Because you're open-minded, you've got the triggers super deep, and now they're triggering you, and thus destroying what? Your mind. Ever so slightly. If nothing else, just occupying a frequency inside your mind robs you of using the same frequency of energy to do what you want to do with your life, right? It's like you're trying to recite a poem. You're trying to talk to a friend, and I'm just shouting in your ear. You're like, ah, shut up, man. I can't even think, man. How many times you've heard that in a sitcom? Would you shut up? I can't even think, you know? That's the mechanism. It's electricity overload. Now, what would be a subliminal method of passing that same signature on? Well, didn't I just do an episode that said that the frequency of 425 to 450 is enough power to penetrate the mind in the psychotronic weapon episode? Okay, well, they can get it in your head. From wherever you are, they can get it into your head. So here's all those little triggers. Firing away. Freaking you out. Not good, right? Why? Because it's making your soul retreat from your vessel. Thus, the signal on the TV that was really, really clear inside your consciousness, which is your mind, starts to flicker. And you don't have an antenna you can put your hand on and try to get it all reattached, right? To make the signal better. Now, obviously, the rehabilitation from any of this would most likely, one, become aware of this concept, study it for yourself, see if it appeals to you, see if it's logical to you. Study it, see if when you feel really weird, what are you doing at that exact moment, and does it mirror anything else in your past? Holding on to the past. So many people want to just have this crutch. And, you know, I understand if it just happened to you. Of course, you're still thinking it through yourself. But stuff that happened a really, really long time ago, it just depends. Was it absolutely mortifyingly horrible? Which means embarrassing, by the way. Well, running away from it, what's that going to do? The mouse is going to control you. You're going to have to figure out a way to just basically do a few different things. You can cold turkey your trauma. Cut it off. Simply realize that when you woke up this morning, you were reborn. And you're reborn every morning. Go see my episode on Dreamscapes, and it'll get actually really interesting to you. But if there's a more methodical, you know, methodology that's needed, you have to go through your own personal PTSD rehabilitation. Study the moment. Realize people were different in the past. Maybe they're dead today. If they're dead, then man, it's over, man. That problem's in the ground 6 feet under, rotten. They're gone. Now you get to live your life the way you want to. You are freed. Now we know that prisoners have been in jail for 10, 20 plus years. They have various traumas when they come out, but it's mainly rebuilding their confidence, existing in a society that's free. But there are plenty of people that have been under like that. And even though they have these, I don't know what a cell phone is, I don't know how to operate a computer, what the hell is the internet, that happens every single day that you're alive, people getting released from prison, they serve their time, and they're done. Sometimes for nonviolent crimes, they're just in there forever. But they get freed for some reason. They're still appreciating every single flower they walk by, every single moment they're free. They can turn a TV on, they can eat whatever they want, they can wear whatever clothes they want. They're just getting used to being free again. Well, if you're not in that situation, then I think that we should be able to experience at least the best experience that a prisoner who's been in prison for a long time experiences, because we're not in one, technically. Now, of course, PTSD is about being trapped in those situations. And again, if you're suffering like the normal battlefield PTSD, please see my episode on that. Now, going back to the initial statements in this episode about potentially this theory of when you dial out of your body, you can sort of create a glitch in the system, a coincidence. I'm not so concerned about the exact word of coincidence. I'm more interested in the mechanism that might be true. The dialing out of your body allows you to return to your soul being, which is sort of being your own author of reality. You're painting in your own reality. This is why I think dreams are important. The more you dream, and the more that you consciously think about your own dreams, you don't have to share them with anybody. If you do, it's a very fascinating experience. And it may or may not be related to the benefits of dreaming directly. It may just be more you becoming conscious of your dreams, so that when you go in, you have a personal experience, you can get more out of it, even in this world. What do they always say about the third eye? One, you never want to poison your third eye. Precious metals in your body poison your third eye, especially fluoride. It literally crystallizes in the pineal gland. And that's a bit of a problem, wouldn't it be? The aperture by which you're connected to your vessel is sort of being clogged. The hose isn't being destroyed. The hose has got plaque inside of it, basically. And your soul is having a problem fully connecting with your vessel. So you become a serf. That's why Hitler used it on the Jews in the concentration camps to get them to be docile to being imprisoned. The beautiful thing is, the less you put that crap in your body, it does just filter out. All right, so you want to keep that part of your brain really, really juiced up. Again, what I understand about the Tibetan monks singing in the tones is that that actually is vibrating the pineal gland. The whole Om ritual is about vibrating the pineal gland. I think that makes complete and utter sense, which is why those tones are so strange. They're trying to literally, physically vibrate that organ inside their mind by using their vocal cords. When I first heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, that makes complete sense. Too bad, as a Western American, I will never be with someone who's got the talent to teach me, most likely. But I think there's other methods. We know perception is reality. A friend of mine tonight, he said this really brilliant phrase. He's said this a couple times, but he said it so much better tonight. He said, if you came to see me and we sat across the table from each other, and he goes, I'm looking at your face and you're looking at my face. He said, do you realize the only two places in the entire universe where the images of our faces exist is in our two minds? Because if no one else is looking at your face, then your face only exists in this universe, in my mind. The image of your face. Oh my God, that's great, man. Because the overarching brilliance of the statement has to do with the fact that we perceive things and then they become what we might fashion as real. The concept of being real. Well, how much of this reality do we ingest off digital devices that then becomes real? And then narratives go way beyond just a vision in the mind. It becomes the construct of what you believe about something. They're trying to teach all this critical race theory. Okay, we're trying to pre-program everyone to have this indoctrination about race. And as many brilliant philosophers have stepped in and said, oh, this is a really bad idea. I understand you have good intentions, but this is a really bad idea. You're teaching one group of people they're inferior and another group of people that they're so superior in a backhanded way that they need to tone it down. Oh, okay. Great idea. And of course, the end product is they want a new generation to start out with the notion that they're the opposite. We can't have a balanced world if we're teaching polarity like that to anybody. Some of you might believe the statement that we're all created equal. Well, that whole philosophy of education absolutely positively contradicts that statement. But I think some of us live sort of, is just sort of a jokey physical model. If you were to literally draw a diagram, and there's plenty of diagrams out there when you look at chakra diagrams especially. I run into them all the time when I do research for episodes, especially when I'm looking for photos of things. But they'll have a human body. It's kind of transparent. You can maybe sometimes they render the brain inside the head. But they'll have like a vector of energy, like a magnetic pole going through the human body. Now that can be construed as the ethereal winds that constantly make us up. Or it could be the way that your soul makes a path through the tubular device that is the human body. Remember, we're all tubes. Everything's tubes. Your mouth to your butt, that's a tube. Your brain's a bunch of tubes. All of your organs are tubes. All right. Well, what's flowing through it? Well, in some cases, food and water. Other times, your soul. All right. So if you were to draw the entity of the body as the vessel, the soul's coming through your brain, and this other construct is the amalgamation of the two, right? Dielectric and magnetic makes electromagnetism. Same sort of thing. Two make one. Okay. If you start identifying yourself as a soul and not a body and not a mind, which is what all the gurus keep trying to get you to understand about yourself, believe it or not, even if you don't subscribe to this or you do subscribe to it, but you're not having any immediate delta between the way you woke up yesterday and today, I assure you, the more that you constantly remind yourself of that, it will become like the drummer pushing down, playing the drums into the autonomic system. You will just simply perceive yourself as a soul every day that you wake up. For a while, you'll have to remind yourself throughout the day, oh yeah, that's what I believe, that's what I believe. But eventually, it just becomes what you believe. What this allows you to do is to observe yourself from outside. I think that might be one of the almost evolutionary things of how we possess a vessel. Case in point, when you're older, you calm down. You do. You were impatient as a young person, and you're more patient as you get older. Now, some people could attribute that to your overall lack of energy and whatever to get into an argument, but I think in that particular case, you become a silent cynic, the grumpy old man, that when you do talk, oh my God, flames and knives fly out of your mouth. That's not the case. In most cases, you do find really gentle older people. And it's sometimes confused for weakness and serfdom, but it's not. They've simply become more mature. They simply, through the graduation of their body aging, have become more of a soul. Either involuntary without religion, or voluntarily because they have religion. There's a third, which is that it simply exists, and God does too, and we'll let the rest of it be a Christmas present after we pass away, as a vessel. There's been several movies where, you know, bring John Malkovich, and I can't remember the one with Woody Allen, but where they portray the inside of the brain and a committee of people inside the brain working to make the body work. In that particular case, you essentially have yourself, if you boil it down to an analogy, the chair of which you are commanding this whole game is from inside your head. It's a fun little cartoon to portray inside your mind to give yourself some sort of identity to your id. That is your consciousness, right? What I'm trying to tell you is, let's move that seat just outside your head. You're sitting maybe 2 feet off the back of your head. Oh, you're still in control of everything that is you. But you're now viewing yourself in a third-person video game as opposed to a first-person video game. What was interesting when we actually got the technology to do a third-person video game in 3D, because they've always had it in 2D, right? Pac-Man's all, everything's all third-person, right? When you look at your character, instead of through the eyes of your character, but more when we started portraying the human form properly with 3D animations, it became synonymous with reality because why? We see three-dimensional human beings as we look through our two eyeballs, right? But there was a paradigm advancement. It's just like when we went from iconic language where every word that we knew, everything that we wanted to say to each other, or write down, I should say, was the icon of that thing. There's a picture of a dog, that means dog. Picture of a cat, that means a cat. When we started phonetic languages, D-O-G-C-A-T, we became a linear thinking being, and we gained the overall capability of strategizing things, of seeing a season go from spring to summer to fall to back to winter. We could understand that and we could advance our agricultural capabilities because we could see things. We started seeing the linear time much better. We went from a now society to a linear time society. All right. When you're observing yourself in a more third-person soul fashion, it's sort of like remote controlling a car. You see more information at one time. You kind of technically see the back of your head. You see your whole body. You see yourself exist. And one of the things I believe that actors have a capability of doing is seeing themselves in third person. I think that is one of the God-given traits of a thespian. One of the endearing stories I heard was the woman that played Lilu in Fifth Element. She had been a fashion model for a long time, and it was her first acting job, and so she was acting. She did this amazing job, right? I give her ultimate score for how she did that, especially being a first-time actress. But she said that when they were filming inside the cab, at the point she jumps down through the car, Bruce Willis was trying to teach her how to put her face in the light properly to be where the shot was and physically know that there's this rectangle that's coming out of the camera. And if you're over there, we can't see. And if you're over here, you're right in the parallel lines that say this is where the action is inside the frame. He gave her the innate capability that either he was born with or that he developed very quickly over time. She obviously mastered it very quickly. So it can take just a teeny tiny perception change to give you this amazing capability to rule your own destiny. I think this stuff is fascinating. I think it gives you a level of control that, I'll put it to you this way. If you're 100% human and you don't believe in anything especially, then boy, are you just preparing yourself to be utterly and completely controlled. I think people who get drunk and really, they can't remember what they did the next day, you know, when they think about where was I? Oh, I can't remember. Those are 100% human people. The people that perceive themselves in third person, they're typically the people that say, well, I know I was totally out of control, but I remember everything that happened. I saw myself drunk and it was embarrassing and I didn't want to ever be over the limit anymore. Tipsy, that's fine, but I don't want to be drunk ever again, let alone the after effects for most of us, right? I pity anyone that doesn't have hangovers. Oh my God, how your liver survives. I mean, I would probably be a much more habitual drinker if I didn't have after effects, you know. But I do, and they're fairly quick. So give this some thought. Let me know what you think. And let me know any life experiences, evolutions of how you perceive yourself as a human that might be applicable here. Because again, one little comment can really be the right words. Maybe I said everything wrong, but how you surmise it in a comment is what other people were just needing to hear. Because I think that we want to get to a state where those that are trying to terrorize us in this planet start looking like children. Can your 2-year-old scare the living crap out of you without even trying? Sure. You just weren't ready. You were concentrating on something, and your kid comes in and goes, Dad, Mom, and you're like, oh my God. Sure, that can happen. But let's let it be those serendipitous moments that will probably only happen a couple times in your entire lifetime because you'll be desensitized to it after a first few times. We want to get to a state where we cannot be traumatized, no matter what happens. Can we be sad? Sure. Can we be devastated? Sure. Can we be in shock? I think that's slightly different than trauma. Just slightly. So, anyway, let me know what you think in the comments. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's got everything, audio, video, social media, all new remastered season 1, a store with a new shirt. I will be bringing back one of the old shirts because I just wore my I Like UFO shirt to a party, a 4th of July party here, and I had 3 people ask me what the hell it was, tell me they loved the shirt, and then I was able to tell them about the show. I'm going to redesign it a little bit. I'm going to calm it down just a tad. For those of you who come in through Patreon and PayPal, thank you so much. You make everything work. For those of you who don't know what that's all about, you get the episodes early. You get the podcast early now, too. So, plus you get fireside chats that you don't get here, and one is even in color. So anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. I know people who stutter because they talk too fast.